You are now listening to WBPPR, Big Pretty Pirate Radio. This is An Evening with the Authors, and I am your host, Dana Glass. Loyal listeners, I owe you the most sincere of apologies. I have not been posting episodes as I should be. Listening back, I realize the quality of the episodes I have been posting is less than desirable. There is a reason for the gap between broadcasts. Whether it is a good reason or not is for you to decide. It is not one I'm proud of. If you listen to the last episode, you will have been introduced to my former best friend, Marco from Security. We had a quick and passionate friendship that ended in disaster. We are not on speaking terms, and no, we did not make it to our destination. I am here. I am recording another episode. I am a tainted man, no longer with a clean criminal record. In fact, it is now as soiled as my soul. I actually don't want to talk about it. I don't know if I've ever said those words before. Just suffice to say, I will never be drinking alcohol again. That's it. I have nothing else to say. Let's just get on with the episode and hear some readings from writers. And here we go. Our first author decided to take true crime podcasts to the next level by not broadcasting them by audio, but by writing it down for people to read. Now to present some of his true crime podcast series is Dale Defendall.
Good evening. I am Dale Defendall, and you are reading a true crime podcast book. I now ask you to imagine two brushes gently rubbing the top of a snare drum and slowly fade away. It had been 2 weeks and 5 days since Lexi went missing. The police were of no help, and so her loved one took to posting their own advertisements, hoping someone, anyone, maybe even a true crime podcaster, would help discover Lexi's whereabouts and if she was even still alive. I entered the town of Midland on a cold and gray November day, but I was left with more questions than answers. I noticed the names of the places there: Midland Bowling Alley, Midland Pub, Midland Courthouse. I was sensing a pattern. While refilling my gas tank, I reached out to the cashier to see if they were familiar with the case and that was gaining prominence online, but they declined to comment. As I slowly drove through the town, the place looked abandoned. All the cars were in the driveways, but the shops and restaurants were empty. I saw a postal worker and asked them if the strip malls were always this empty, but I couldn't understand them because of the medical mask they were wearing over their mouth for some reason. I could tell that a town like this was going to give me what we call in the true crime genre full body chills. Did you know you can create your own website with an award-winning template? 24/7 customer support. Browse modern, elegant templates. Design and manage your site with Squarespace. The case file said that Lexi often visited a local park, and so I thought I would check it out. It looked like, in order to find out what happened to Lexi, I was going to have to recreate the timeline. I stopped and asked a man who was emptying a trash can. He was wearing a green shirt with a brown logo in the shape of a tree that read Midland Parks. I had a suspicion that he worked at the park. This is when you read the next lines with a different voice instead of mine. It is the voice of the park employee that I was interviewing. Pretty little thing. Yellow hair. Yeah, I remember her. Only because I had to keep cleaning up after that bitch. Now back to my voice. I asked if he saw her 2 weeks and 5 days ago, and if she left the park with someone in particular. Back to the witness's voice. Yes. Now back to my voice. Who was it? And back to the witness's voice. Old Larry Smudgeons. He lives just there at the end of the road. This is when the keys below middle C on a piano would strike a few times. Dr. Squatch provides organic and natural homemade soap to men who want to feel like a man and smell like a champion. I was obsessed with this crime. It haunted me. What awful things did old Larry Smudgeons do to Lexi? And what happened? So I could get in on this and possibly break through to 1,000 followers. This is when you would suddenly hear some jingle bells ring and the sound of an upbeat soft jazz that quickly fades out. I took to a bathroom break at a donut shop. It had one employee and one cop. One too proud to admit that he had jelly on his chin and one too afraid to point it out. They both eyed me as I stepped in to simply use the restroom. See, the last time I inspected a creepy old house and talked with a creepy old man, I involuntarily relieved myself, and I was sure not to make that mistake again. As I left, I felt a tingle on my back. I wondered what the donut maker and the officer were hiding. But that trail went cold. I tucked my shirt in and firmly walked to the dilapidated house of Mr. Smudgeons. There would be a knock sound. You can make your own knock sound. I introduced myself to Mr. Smudgeons. He seemed hard of hearing, but happily welcomed me in for an interview. The inside of the house was either covered in dust or plastic to protect furniture, yet the smell of urine filled the air. I saw a chain that led to the basement. In the living room, there was a small metal tray table with what looked like to be the carving of a cartoonish bone. I turned and Larry held out his carving knife at me. In Larry's voice,
I see you caught my project. Well, an old man has got to have a hobby. Besides, I think she'll like that.
Back to my voice. I looked and saw on his shoulder yellow hairs. And this is the high-pitched end of the piano keyboard. I left the house and reported everything to the Midland police, making sure they knew I was a true crime podcaster and not just an amateur. I also made sure that they knew that with AdThrive, they could get the highest possible income for each page view. They handle ads so you don't focus on creative, amazing, high-quality content. When the police investigated, they discovered Lexi's bones buried in Mr. Smudgeon's backyard. On the last episode chapter, I dive deep into the dark recesses of senility and blow the case wide open to find out that Lexi was safe and sound. So please keep reading along with me, Dale Defendall, in this true crime podcast book, Missing Pets.
Loyal listeners, I owe you a second apology during this program, as I've already broken my promise to not imbibe alcohol. I'm sorry. I'm a human being, and I make mistakes. Just the one, though. Just the one bottle. Just the one bottle. That's all I'm going to drink. I was listening to Mr. Defendale, and it did feel good, I will admit, to see another person embarking on this new platform of podcasting, and I wish him the best of luck as he also transitions into writing, which I've been saying I'm going to do, but I guess I'm probably not at this point. I haven't yet, so why start now? Our next author has written 4 parenting books and has published 1 of them. After his 4th divorce, he decided to keep it real with his new book, Trials of Being a Decent Stepfather on Trial. Please enjoy Sean A. Sisterman.
Hi, or hello, or howdy, or bonjour, or bonjour, or yo, or as they say in Hawaii, bye, or aloha if you're trying to be fancy with it. I am Sean A. Sisterman. That is Sean A. Sisterman with 2 T's. The 2 T's are in my middle name. Asked. Sean Asked Sisterman. A-S-T-T. As you all know, I have written several books. Getting Back With Your Ex-Wife. I did not complete that one. Getting Back At Your Ex-Wife that you're originally trying to get back at. That one did not complete as well. And the last one, Different Ways to Say Hello. The book that I am publishing now is, as you all know, Different Ways to Be a Stepdad. They made me change the title to The Trials of Being a Decent Stepfather on Trial. I'd like to read a quick insert, if you will, in my book. So, there I was on trial for a crime of being a decent stepfather. The judge said, "Do you solemnly swear?" I interrupted, "Hell, I swear all the frickin' time." The gavel made an inappropriate interruption of my well-thought-out joke. By the judge's voice, I could tell this was gonna be a long week, or 7 days, depending on your calendar. "How many restraining orders have you broken?" asked the lawyer with the bad breath. I should have known not to hire him because he always popped in garlic pills for supplements. "None that I know of, unless you include the ones from my previous wives." You see, people of the audience, I am a decent stepdad, meaning when my life leaves me, I do not leave my kids, no matter how bad the marriage was, or how long or short. You see, my stepfather left me when I was 19. I remember that day. It was a rainy day, and I told him to leave. He did. He failed the test. I, however, will not fail that test. I had 4 wives, 2 of them are deceased in my heart. But all of them have kids that will never pass away in my heart. Even if they do die in some awful or justified way, I will never leave. My first wife had 3 kids. I practically raised them myself for a week. after that, she did the rest. I still send them birthday cards. My second wife, who is dead to me, had four kids. All of them with the same man, she said. I don't believe that. But nevertheless, I still talk to them daily in my heart and on Instagram. My third wife had no kids of her own, but she did have a strong relationship with her nieces and nephews. I, however, did not. They were jerks. You come to one Christmas blacked out and no one forgets. I, however, did forget that day. But I did not forget the time that I revisited next Christmas and I was met with a punch to the face. I left those kids a card signed, "Yours truly, your papa, or real dad." That became a hairy situation, which I cannot talk about legally. My fourth wife had kids my age. Yes, I am a cougar hunter. She wants a restraining order for me, so that is why I'm in court. I, however, want to see her kids. She has one beautiful daughter and one son, my age. And the daughter is also my age. And one grandchild. Even though her daughter is an adult, I wouldn't leave her for the world. Or her son. That is still my kid. Repeat after me. You never leave your kids. You never leave your kids. That's right. You don't have to like me, or you'll but you do have to respect me. That's what I said to all my kids. And ironically, that's the chapter of my first book. You gotta be a strong stepfather. There's no such thing as a weak stepfather. I would even start out with a strong spanking. And I said, your mother will get one too. This makes no one feel uncomfortable. Here are the rules of being a decent stepfather. Number one, buy your kids a gift and find out what they like. Get to know them. This way, you can take it back or hold it against them if they ever disrespect you. Number two, remind them of how expensive that gift was. This does not work if you do not follow rule number one. Rule number three, go to their sports games. There's no such thing as being too drunk for a sports activity. I yelled at the umpire and was kicked out of that chess tournament. Number four, you can always be too drunk for sports activities. This is true. I don't like it, but it is true. I have to say it. Number five, there are some things you cannot do on school property. I go into that further in detail in my book, Different Ways to Say Hello. Number six, if you take your daughter out on a daddy-daughter date, make sure the amount of dates are less than your current wife. This is important. Number seven, make sure you spend less money on the daddy-daughter dates than you do on your current wife. Number eight, do not expose that you're thinking of leaving your mother on a daddy-daughter date. Don't do it. What happens in Vegas doesn't always stay in Vegas. Vegas was the name of my stepdaughters and currently my girlfriend. And ironically, enough. And ironically, what happens in Vegas does stay in Vegas for 9 months. Yes. Number nine, you're going to be a grandma is not a good way to break up with your current wife. Your future brother-in-law and son will not like that. He has wrote me he did not like that. And number 10, repeat after me, of course, Never leave your kids. Repeat after me. Never leave your kids. Thank you so much.
Well, Mr. Sisterman, I know what it's like to see yourself in a different way than others see you. And I tip my hat. Keep doing you. That's all we can do now, isn't it? Okay. Now, to read an excerpt from her self-published memoir, Have You Seen My Husband? Available for free on her personal live journal page, Deborah Wetz shares her story about paying the price for a prank gone wrong.
Last year, I got trapped in a life-size cake for 9 days. Hello, I'm Deborah Wetz, and this is my tale, or at least an excerpt of it. If you want the whole thing, you're going to have to pay for it. It's available for free at deborahwetz.livejournal.com. Chapter 1. Hello, my name is Deborah Wetz. And this is my tale. One fun fact about me is that I love pranks. I love playing pranks for as long as I can remember. I was born on April 1st, and as my mom used to say, you being born was the biggest April Fool's joke God could ever play, which I'm pretty sure was a compliment. I especially love food pranks, filling donuts with mayonnaise, replacing the cream center of an Oreo with toothpaste, dipping an onion in caramel and saying, hey, here's a candy apple. Well, I have been playing food pranks on my husband Harley for a solid 10 years. He loves cakes, so last year I thought it would be very funny to make one of those life-size cakes, but instead of filling it with flour and sugar and eggs, I would fill it with me. And he would be so surprised when I jumped out, and then, bonus, he would have to eat me. Seeing as how it had been a good 10 years since he had licked the clam, as they say, I thought it would be a win-win situation for both of us. And hey, he might even find a pearl in that clam. Bonus prank. I worked for the entire month secretly making a life-size cake. I built a three-tiered masterpiece out of wood that I stole from Home Depot and old-fashioned wash tins that I found in my dead grandma's basement. I even designed a metal pop-up hatch I could burst out of, just like opening a can of Tab, my favorite soft drink. Finally, the day arrived. Harley left for work around 7:30, and I spent the day putting the finishing touches on my cake and making sure I looked my best for the big surprise. I shaved my legs, my armpits, and even the tops of my toes for once. When 4:45 hit, I stripped down into my birthday suit, stuck a pearl in my snatch, and I climbed into the special cake, locking the clamp from the inside. I waited patiently, naked as the day I was born, for what seemed like hours. I was starting to cramp up, and I really needed to use the restroom. I had drank 6 tabs that day in my excitement. Finally, I couldn't take it anymore, and I decided I would have to get out of that cake to figure out where Harley was. Well, long story short, when I tried to unhitch the latch, it fell right off. I'm wishing I had brought some snacks into the cake with me, maybe a few cans of Tab. But I had nothing. I was trapped. The minutes turned into hours, the hours turned into days, and the days turned into 1 week, and then 2 more days on top of that week. For 9 days, I was trapped in there. I pounded and kicked and screamed and shouted and eventually made peace with the life I had lived and prepared to die. I also pooped and peed myself multiple times. Finally, on the 9th day, by some miracle of God, a knock at the front door. I thought, it's Harley coming back for me. I screamed for him to come inside and free me from my prison cake. Luckily, I had left the front door unlocked, so he came inside and opened the cake from the outside. Out popped piles of confetti, and when the air cleared, I stared up at my savior. It wasn't Harley, but a man in a blue suit and tie, looking down at me, naked and bedraggled and shivering in a pile of my own fecal. He helped me out and said, I think I need to go to the hospital. So he drove me to the nearest emergency room, and once I was all settled into bed with tubes and water and everything, he handed me an envelope and said, I'm sorry about the timing of this, but you've been served. And then he handed me divorce papers from Harley. Boy, did I have a laugh about that. I thought Harley finally got me back with the ultimate April Fool's Day prank. Boy, oh boy. Harley still hasn't come home, but when he does, we're going to have one hell of a laugh over a couple cans of Tab and a slice of his favorite cake. And also, if anyone has seen or heard from Harley, please let him know that I love his prank, but he can come home now. Thank you so much.
Deborah Wetz, I pray that you find who you're looking for, the same as I pray that everyone finds what they're looking for. Some don't know what they're looking for, so at least you know that you're looking for your husband. Third apology. 2 bottles will be it. 2 bottles. It's a 2-bottle night. 2-bottle night for Dana. It is not even nighttime. So I don't know if these bottles count. We'll see. Our final author loves 2 things above all else. Our Lord and Savior Jesus Christ and Zack Snyder movies. Back in 1993, he was part of the team of editors who worked on the original Extreme Teen Bible, a Bible that retold the good news in a cool, hip way designed to appeal to modern teen Christians. However, he was fired for keeping it too real for the pussies. Since then, he has been working tirelessly on his own even more extreme Bible, one that is not afraid to talk to Christians the way cool Christians actually talk. Reading from the book of Matthew in the Badass Bible for Christians Who Aren't Little Bitches, here is Broden.
What's up? Alright, so first, quick note about the book of dudes. So the New Testament was written by several dudes, all who pretty much tell the exact same story, but like slightly different versions, but that don't actually change anything. And honestly, it kind of sucks reading them back to back. It's like watching Thunderball and then Never Say Never Again. You're sitting there like, okay, I guess technically it's a different movie, but why? And honestly, I didn't feel like rewriting the same story over and over, so I just consolidated the books into one super book that includes all the good parts and none of the fat. I'm pretty much to the Holy Bible what Topher Grace is to the Star Wars prequel. Also, quick note, this is a work in progress. I'm always working on it. It hasn't gotten published yet. Publishers are fucking dicks when it comes to the Bible. Y'all feel me. I'm reading from Dudes 28, the final chapter. Guess who's back? So it's a Sunday after Jesus died, and his old lady Mary Magdalene and his other old lady, the other Mary, are sad as fuck. And they go to visit the tomb. They brought some spices because I guess like nobody had invented flowers yet, and it probably would be a little bit before people start putting little crosses up. So they're sitting there crying their eyes out when Mary Magdalene notices the water in her chalice starts to rumble Jurassic Park style. Suddenly, the entire ground around them starts to shake. Some rocks above Jesus' cave grave shake loose and start to fall towards the ladies. Now Magdalene is fit, so you know she works out. So she does some sick parkour acrobatics and dodges these rocks like she's in the fucking Matrix. But other Mary is like 50, and that's super old for Bible times. So she's like bent straight to get bodied by this giant-ass rock. And she just stands there, puts her hands up, and closes her eyes. But just before the boulder is about to bust her skull wide open, it stops a fraction of an inch from her face. The former Virgin Mary slowly opens her eyes. I'm trying to distinguish. I'll call her the old Mary. The old Mary opens her eyes and it looks upward. She sees muscly thighs, abs, pecs, the most handsome face she's ever seen. Standing right in front of her, holding this huge rock like it's fucking nothing, is an angel. And he's glowing like the sun, his tight white robe hugging his body perfectly, leaving very little of the imagination. So meanwhile, the Roman guards that have been assigned to Jesus' tombs, they saw all this shit go down. They're losing their fucking minds. First dude just pisses himself and passes out. And then the second guy starts freaking out and screaming like, "Oh, I'm in a nightmare, I can't wake up," and starts smashing his head against a palm tree. So the third guy tries snapping him out of it, but he can't. He's like, "I'm sorry about this, Frank," and he knocks him out with the hilt of his sword. So then he's there with his two unconscious co-workers, and his story, he knows his bosses aren't going to believe. So he eventually decides, "Fuck it, I'll let one of these guys explain it," pisses himself and pretends to pass out. So back to the tomb. Old Mary is overwhelmed with conflicting feelings. The last time she saw an angel, she ended up pregnant, so she was understandably horny. She may have been old, but other Mary can still get it. Like Mary Steenburgen, she just got sexier as she is. But like on the other hand, her son had like just died this horrific public death, so you know, it's complicated. And then Mary Magdalene, she's also feeling ambivalently turned on. So she starts twirling her hair, biting her lip, hoping to catch the angel's eye. But he just sets down this rock he'd been holding and wordlessly makes his way to the tomb. The two Marys couldn't help but admire his tight ass and impressive delts as he effortlessly rolled away the rock until Jesus' tomb and sat on top of it. From their angle on the ground, both Marys could see clear up his robe. He knew exactly what he was doing. "Oh yeah," said Hot Mary. "What was our plan to move that giant rock anyway? I hadn't even thought of that." "Shut your mouth," snapped old Mary, understandably emotional. "If you embarrass me in front of this angel, I'll have your ass back on the street corner so fast your head'll spin." "Whoa, whoa, whoa," said the angel. "Calm your tits, ladies. I bring good news. I know you're here looking for Jesus, but he ain't here. He's risen just like he kept telling you he's gonna do." "Are you shitting me?" asked Hot Mary. "Because I saw him get fully crucified just a few days ago." "I shit you not," said the angel. "See for yourself. This tomb is emptier than a theater playing a Brie Larson movie." Both Marys stepped forward and saw that the tomb was indeed as empty as a theater playing a Brie Larson movie. "Now," the angel said, "call all of his followers, disciples, apostles. Tell him Jesus is back as hell and he wants to chill with him in Galilee." "Oh, except for Judas. Fuck that guy." "What do you mean, call him?" said the other Mary, confused. "Oh yeah," said the angel, "I guess phones haven't been invented yet. time works differently for us angels. I don't have time to explain it. Just, I don't know, make some flyers. Are either of you ladies literate? Both Mary sheepishly looked at the ground, now embarrassed in front of this hunky angel. Okay, well then, he said, I guess, like, shout the good news. Walk from town to town telling everyone what you saw here. And with that, the angel crouched down and jumped back into heaven, like Neo when he first learned how to fly. As soon as he was out of sight, the two Marys started giggling and talking about how hot the angel was. I'm pretty sure he was making eyes at me, said Mary Magdalene. You think that about everyone, you whore, said the other Mary. She meant it to be, like, fun bitchy, like how girls are always mean to their friends, but she straight up forgot Mary used to be a real prostitute and immediately felt bad for her choice of words. I didn't mean that, said old Mary. I'm sorry. But hot Mary wasn't responding. She stood there completely frozen, staring straight ahead. Then old Mary saw what she was looking at. There, right in front of them, was none other than Jesus fucking Christ himself. Miss me, he said with a cheeky grin. What are you doing here, asked old Mary. I came here to tell you I'm back, and I want you to tell all of my followers to meet me in Galilee. Oh, said hot Mary, an angel just came down and told us all of that. What the fuck, exclaimed Jesus. I came all the way down here to tell you, to surprise you two. This is bullshit. Who is this angel? What do you look like? I'm telling my dad about this. Neither of the Marys could think of a way to describe the angel aside from how sexy he was, and that didn't seem appropriate. Said hot Mary, he was white. Well, that doesn't narrow it down much, said Jesus. Angry, but not wanting to take it out on the women. Why don't you two just head to Galilee? I'm going to go get this shit sorted out with my dad. I'm an adult Lord and Savior. You can't just keep sending angels to do my business without talking to me first. So the two Marys headed out towards Galilee, leaving Jesus to shadow the clouds. So later, back in the city, the first guard had gone to the chief priest and told him everything he had witnessed, obviously leaving out the part where he pissed himself. Now, dumb as this story sounded, everyone was dumb in Bible days, so they believed it without question. The chief priests met with the elders. When they came back, they had a mad stack of Bible times cash tossed at the guard. Said, tell everyone Jesus' little cult members came and stole his body while you and the other guards were sleeping, said the chief priest. But we're Roman guards. If we do that, we'll be killed for sleeping on duty, said the guard. Don't worry about that, said the priest. I got, like, mad connections with the Roman army. I'll see to it you and your men don't get in any trouble. Who do you know in the Roman army, said another priest. Hey, shut the fuck up. Who cares if he dies after he tells everyone our stories? So the soldiers took the bunny and did as they were instructed. And this story has been widely circulating. And this story has been widely circulated among Jews to this very day. Quick note, I didn't change that last line. That's straight up King James. So Jesus finally reconnects with his crew in Galilee, minus Judas, of course, because fuck him. When they saw him, they worshiped the shit out of him. Some doubted, so Jesus let them stick their fingers through his hand holes. Guess you're probably used to this, he jokingly slut-shamed Mary Magdalene. Then he got all serious and addressed his followers. Look, y'all have seen this shit now. You know I'm pretty much God Jr., and everything I said was right, and all my haters can eat a million dicks in hell for eternity. So go forth and spread this message. Shame and convert any idiot dumb enough to doubt what you now know. For you know the truth, and now your every action is excusable. As long as you believe in me, your every action is above reproach. No matter what you do, or how blasphemous your interpretations of my words get, or even what your lying bitch ex-girlfriends post about you online, all believers, in fact, let's call it all Christians will get into heaven. Amen. Or is it?
You know what, Broden? I think you got it figured out.
You got to figure out, Broden. And I miss you better than me. Oh, loyal listeners, that's the end of the episode. It's the end of the program. I want to thank all the authors on the episode. I want to thank the White Rabbit Cabaret in Indianapolis, Indiana, Planet of the Tapes in Louisville, Kentucky, and the Yard Theater in Los Angeles, California, for hosting our live shows. But most of all, I want to thank you, my loyal listeners, for sticking by me through the thick and the thin, and the thinnest and the thinner. Thank you for spending an evening with the authors. Good night.